and Curve Crew are back. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Halfway through the Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Drew Mindell, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg with you on this Saturday, the 21st of May. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Michael Russo. Michael covers the Minnesota Wild for the Minneapolis Star Tribune. Mike, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
No problem. How are you guys?
Doing very well, Mike. Thanks very much for joining us.
Did you miss us, Michael?
You miss us.
Yeah, absolutely. I always love coming on.
Yeah, well, we appreciate you joining us here, Mike. Obviously, we brought you on to talk about the big news around the Minnesota Wild. That was the hire last week, or maybe 10 days ago now, of Bruce Boudreau as new Wild head coach. Are you surprised with how quickly Chuck Fletcher acted in order to get Boudreau under contract? Did you think that once, you know, Boudreau became available, Fletcher had, you know, tunnel vision and he was going to be his guy no matter what?
Yeah, no doubt. In fact, I was buying a car the second that Boudreau was fired, and I called my editor immediately. I'm like, hey, I'm going to run home and write a story, because it was just obvious that he would be the front runner. They had to go experience this time after hiring first-year coaches and Todd Richards and Mike Yeo, so you just knew that the owner wasn't going to stomach another newbie. And really, if it wasn't Bruce Boudreau, it very likely would have been Randy Carlyle. And I just don't think that the Wild wanted to go that way. Bruce has had a lot of, obviously, as we all know, regular season success, not a lot of playoff success. But the Wild's a team that really hasn't had a ton of playoff success and has really floundered at times in the middle of the last three regular seasons. So it made a ton of sense. Obviously, it worked out perfectly for Boudreau. He got into a little bit of a bidding war with the Ottawa Senators and the Wild bit and gave him a fourth year, and he made a heck of a contract, obviously, that he agreed to so soon after getting fired.
Michael, I kind of want to ask you about your new car and find out what kind of wheels you're driving right now, but instead we'll stick with the Minnesota Wild. But are you surprised that Chuck Fletcher's job wasn't on the line after the season that they had?
Yeah, I was. I will say that Craig Leopold, to our columnist, who actually, it's funny, I'm walking along the Mississippi River right now with our columnist that wrote the story, but he got Craig Leopold on the phone, and Craig, before the Wild were even eliminated from the playoffs, said publicly that Chuck Fletcher's job was safe. I think it's very puzzling to a lot of Wild fans, just because this team has made, you know, in the mind of a lot of fans, a ton of mistakes, whether it's drafting or trades or, you know, free agent pickups. But you know, you look at everything as a whole, it still is a team that's made the playoffs 4 years in a row. It's went to the second round of the playoffs the last 2 years before this year. Very easily could have won the series against Dallas. But you're right. I mean, it seems like this team is stuck in neutral right now. You know, there are a lot of teams in this division, in my mind, that are on the rise, including the Winnipeg Jets. They're only going to get better now with the second overall pick. And the Wild, again, are rewarded, and I say that in quotes, with a 15th pick after really, you know, again, eking into the playoffs. And if you look at things from a, you know, to me, a global standpoint, the only thing that Parisian Suter has done them is they've turned them into an inside bubble team from being an outside bubble team. And I think the Wild fans are getting tired of the emotional roller coasters that go on through the regular season. We saw them get absolutely dominated by Winnipeg this year. And they're just a team that, I don't know, it seems like they're spinning the wheels, and this could be the beginning of a regression. But it's going to have to be Chuck Fletcher that gets them out of this.
You know, Michael, you talk about kind of that bubble team and where the Wild are at right now. And I look at that forward group and I see kind of an older group, maybe not the most physical, some of their core guys who are getting paid big money and not the fastest guys. And I wonder, is that a fit for Bruce Boudreau and the way that he coaches?
Well, it's a good question. I think they're going to have to be very bold this summer, make a couple big trades, maybe buy out Vanek and maybe sign a couple $3.5 million players rather than going out and spending big money on a Kyle Okposo or somebody like that. They do have, when they're playing on their toes, they do have speed and they can be physical from a forechecking standpoint. But you're right, they're not going to intimidate anybody. They're undersized. And they do have some guys that they're going to have to start to decide if they're going to make long-term commitments to. One is Mikael Granlund, who, again, is going over to international play right now in the World Championships, playing out of his mind, but mm-hmm. maybe that's his level. You know, bigger ice surface, a lot more room and time and space, and something that he's not able to do, it seems, in games in the NHL, especially against big physical teams like we've seen against Winnipeg. So it's I do think there are guys on this team that could succeed under Bruce Boudreau. I think Charlie Coyle, Nino Niederreiter, these are guys that are kind of Bruce Boudreau-type players. But they've got to be better, and Boudreau is going to have to lay down the hammer, and I think lower ice times of guys like Ryan Suter. Maybe talk to Mikko Koivu about you're no longer the number one center. But that's going to be one of the incredible, intriguing storylines of training camp. The only issue is that the Wild will be going into a training camp with a new coach without a lot of guys that are going to be at the World Cup.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Michael Russo of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, discussing the Minnesota Wild. They, of course, hired Bruce Boudreau as their head coach about 10 days ago. Michael, when the playoffs began, Zach Parise was nowhere to be found. Of course, he missed the entire playoffs with the back injury. How much concern is there in the Wild organization that this injury might not be just a short-term problem, that this could linger into next season and or years past?
They're saying they're not concerned, but I don't know how you can't be. He is deciding to rehab this without surgery. He says that everything's progressing well and he's feeling good, and he really feels that by midsummer that he's going to be able to train like he normally does, and he also expects to play in the World Cup. But I will say that you do have to wonder if this is going to alter the type of game he plays. I mean, when you think of Zach Parise, you think of the ultimate grinder, a guy that jams pucks from the side of the net, takes a ton of abuse and cross checks, which is what probably caused his injury in the first place. And you do have to wonder if he's going to have to almost turn himself into more of a periphery type player or a perimeter type player. And, you know, he's somebody that on the power play this year, you saw that he wanted to play on the flank rather than be that guy down low. And that actually created a lot of angst inside the organization. But to save him, they might have to make that move and put him more in a one-time position from the circle on that power play, which is actually not his cup of tea. But he met with Bruce Boudreau yesterday. I know he gave him a positive report about how he's feeling. And right now, at least publicly, both sides are saying they don't think this is going to be an issue. But again, he had a herniated disc that was pinching against his nerve. I don't think that magically just goes away.
Michael, we talked about it earlier. It was a disappointing season for the Minnesota Wild, losing in the first round for a team that really wanted to go far. But when you look at Mikko Koivu playing for Team Finland, they're going to the gold medal game. Matt Dumba playing for Team Canada on defense. He's in the semifinal coming up a little bit later this afternoon on the station. When you look at the way Matt Dumba has played for Canada and the way Mikko Koivu's playing for Finland, you know, in that kind of leadership role, is it nice, at the very least, for Minnesota Wild fans and Minnesota management to see these guys still playing meaningful hockey right now?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess that's the optimistic look. I can tell you Wild fans couldn't care less. In fact, it actually, you know, I hate to say it, from a cynical point of view, with the Mikko Koivu one, it continues the narrative.
Should throw in Michael Granlund as well.
What's that?
We should throw in Mikael Granlund as well, playing for Finland.
Yeah, Granlund's playing great, but there is a narrative amongst Wild fans that are kind of, they're tired of Mikko. You know, he's been the captain for a long time, and he just draws a lot of ire sometimes from fans, and there is always this narrative that, you know, the Wild's his job, and he just loves international play, so this will probably just continue that narrative. I don't think it's fair at all. I think Mikko had a very solid season, and I thought he was very good in the playoffs, So, Dumba's somebody, I think this is good for him. I think the more experience that kid gets, the better. I hope when the Wild, when Chuck Fletcher remembers that he traded Brent Burns to the San Jose Sharks, I hope he doesn't get trigger happy this summer and use Dumba as an asset to try to move him, because I think it's very dangerous to trade a 22-year-old defenseman with that type of shot when he hasn't developed yet. He is, he could be dynamic offensively. He's still learning the game defensively, and I'd like to see him, continue. Maybe a couple short-term deals they got to make a decision on in the summer to see if he can continue to progress under a new coach.
If you are Dumba, Michael, and you look at the four guys, I guess, quote-unquote, ahead of you and being paid pretty big money, significant money in their top four. Do you want the short-term deal to prove yourself, or do you think you're not going to get the opportunity because of the guys ahead of you and maybe ask for more money thinking that it might lead you out of town?
My gut says that he couldn't get it if he wanted it. He really did have an erratic year and was, pretty mediocre at and that's saying it nicely down the stretch. So I've got to think he almost played himself into a bridge type contract, and I do think it would be smart of him to try to, get on a couple short term deals, like quality money, and try to, or not a couple, but maybe a 2-year deal, prove yourself going into potentially in your unrestricted year later. So in other words, have your contract end and you're still an RFA. And I think that'd be good. The Wild tried that with Granlund. Granlund had an okay season, much better in the playoffs. And the Wild are going to have to, again, he's got a year left on his deal, and they're going to have to decide on him long term. And my guess is he's more likely at some point to get traded. But if I'm Dumba, I don't think that I could get a long term deal anyway.
Final question for you, Michael, and we'll let you enjoy the long weekend. Another player that kind of had a kind of an off and on season and really disappointing overall is Jason Zucker. A guy who really has a lot of skill, but was kind of all over the map. He's an RFA. What happens with him?
That's a good question. I think he's also played himself into a very short term contract, 1 or 2 years, and he could potentially be moved. I don't think his value is very high right now. He was on a 30 goal pace last year. He played some good games, if you remember, at the start of the year, that one game in Winnipeg where he scored, 8 seconds into the game, fastest goal in Wild history. And, but then he just absolutely fell off the map, and he's had injury issues at all. With him, it's just, there are times where he's not skating. There's times where he's not thinking the game. He can be a defensive liability. But again, I do think that a lot of the decisions the Wild would have made at the end of the year, if it was a normal situation, some of these guys probably would have played themselves off the roster into trades. But I do think that Bruce Boudreau is a game changer, and I think that Chuck Fletcher is going to see how some of these guys play under a new coach before making a decision. The other thing with Zucker is if he does have the Wild are going to have to probably expose some really quality defensemen in the expansion draft if there is one in the summer. If Jason Zucker has another kind of so-so year, he's somebody that you might be able to say to a team like Vegas, hey, this is the first and only Nevada-produced NHLer. That could be quite the guy for a team like Vegas to take, and maybe then you protect some of your defensemen by leaving a Zucker exposed in the expansion draft and giving them a kind of a sellable commodity out in Vegas. That's just total conjecture, but you know what I mean. It's one of those things where if I'm Vegas, to have a guy like Jason Zucker who's, born pretty much raised in Vegas, I think that'd be huge.
Michael Russo covers the Minnesota Wild for the Minneapolis Star Tribune. Mike, really appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us to talk about the Boudreau hire.
Yep.
Have a good weekend, Mike. Let's head to break. When we come back, we start our UFA of the Week segment. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
On the Curve, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Ten minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Still to come on the show, Josh Cooper is going to join us. He's covering the Sharks and the Blues series, and of course we can talk about the playoffs in general with our good friend Josh. This segment is brought to you by Bell Acres Golf and Country Club and Clear Lake Golf Course. Illegal Curve is thrilled to be presenting the 2016 Bell Acres Pro-Am on Friday, July the 8th. Play with a pro and enjoy an incredible day of golf featuring hole prizes, pre- and post-round meals, and post-round live entertainment. For more information, contact head pro James Chapman at 204-632-8337 or visit bellacres.com.
And Jamie Chapman, of course, is a good friend of the show. We're going to have him on in 2 weeks on June 4th. He's going to come on and talk about the tournament. Super pumped up about that. There's going to be 30 local golf professionals expected in that event. And we're obviously all really good golfers.
So. Yeah, right. I'm terrible. Who's on our team? Like, are we on team with the others? Like, is Drew on our team? Or are we on separate teams?
I think it's probably something we have to discuss.
Okay, so Ezzy and I are on a team.
I'm out. Yeah. I'm out altogether. Yeah.
Okay, Richie, if we're on the same team, though, I'm driving the cart.
Is it best ball?
I don't know about the details. We'll have we're going to have Jamie on in a
couple weeks.
I like
the best ball tournament because I'm an erratic golfer.
That's a good way to describe your golf game.
Yeah,
as erratic.
It goes to the right, it goes to the left, but I have some
good
shots.
You're a big hitter. I mean, you're 300 yards off the tee. It's just
I just don't know where the ball's going. So,
Richie's an erratic golfer. I'm a drunk golfer.
That's for sure. You're more than just a drunk golfer.
Your drunk radio broadcaster.
Yeah, I like that too. Yeah. But best ball I like because then, you know, the occasional good shot I have, like four around, count.
Yeah, they do. They,
and then the ones that are bad, everybody's like, don't worry about it. It's fine.
You don't even have to go look for it.
Yeah, I lose a lot of balls too. Yeah.
It's, you know, straight is the ideal target. You're sort of in off directions.
Drew's a pretty good golfer. He takes a few mulligans every now and then.
Yeah, Drew's a creative scorekeeper.
Yeah.
Well, that's unfair accusations, I must say.
You're like the New Jersey Devils shot counters.
Yeah.
I was... Very low shots.
Okay.
Yeah, Drew, you don't count every shot, but you can hit the ball pretty far. I got to give you credit for that.
I'm going to ignore both of you. UFA of the Week segment, as we mentioned earlier in the show, July 1st is coming up. It's only about 6 weeks away. We're going to start our weekly look at a UFA that's coming up. We'll start with a guy who's sort of an interesting case in that he's not currently playing in the NHL, but he certainly does have an NHL history and NHL pedigree. And from all accounts, it sounds like he wants to return to the NHL. That's former Nashville Predators forward Alex Radulov. We know that he's certainly got a fair bit of baggage, to put it mildly, as when he was last with the Predators back in 2012, he violated curfew along with then-teammate Andrei Kostitsyn in a second-round playoff matchup against the then-Phoenix Coyotes. They were apparently out partying until 5 a.m. the night before Game 2. But you can't argue with the numbers that he has put up, 102 points in 154 games played in the NHL, all with Nashville, 492 points in 391 games played in the KHL, whatever weight you want to put into those numbers. So the question about Alex Radulov, is he worth taking a flyer on as a free agent upcoming in the NHL?
Well, I mean, those numbers are awfully impressive. Both leagues, really.
Mm-hmm.
Is he worth taking a flyer on? I think so. Because... you're not going to be signing Alexander Radulov to a three-year $18 million deal or a three-year $12 million deal. It's not going to be something like that. So I think the reward is likely going to outweigh the risk, and there is risk based on his past and such, but if you're going to sign him to a more reasonable, cost-effective deal, then the risk is such that if he is not abiding by, you know, the terms of the
professionalism,
professionalism, or by the contract that in terms of curfew and things like that. If there's issues there, then you can cut bait if you have to. So I think that there, the upside there, and you can take into account the maybe maturation that he's gone through the past number of years. We don't know anything about that. I mean, we have no inside knowledge of that. But you assume the teams that are looking at him would have some kind of inside knowledge as to how he's performed and maybe matured over the past number of years. But I do see the risk, but I also see the reward. And again, if you're talking about big money, then I just don't see it happening. If you're talking about a lower-level deal to get back in the league and reestablish himself, mm-hmm. and answer some of those character issues, I see that making sense.
Well, Rich, there's no way that any team is going to be offering Alex Radulov $4 or $5 million a year. The front runners for Radulov look like the Florida Panthers, the Detroit Red Wings, and the Colorado Avalanche because he played for Patrick Waugh in the QMJHL. And Florida seems to be the front runner. And when you talk about Florida and the season that they had, it was a terrific season. They have some players under contract. They have to sign some players. They have to get rid of some contracts. So when you're talking about Dave Boland, they probably want to get rid of that contract. But guys like Jonathan Huberdeau, Riley Smith, Eric Gudbranson, Trocheck, those guys are under contract for two more years. So when you're talking about signing Radulov, I agree with Rich. If you sign Radulov to a 1 or 2 year deal for $2 million a year, fine. If he doesn't play well, you can always send him down to the minors or just get rid of him, right? So he is a very talented player. Radulov has always had attitude issues. He's always had commitment issues as far as his commitment to the game. You remember the Nashville Predators brought him back with Kostitsyn.
Yeah,
and both
of those
for the playoff run. And both of those guys missed curfew, and you didn't see them again in the NHL,
right? It's worth pointing out that when they came back for 9 regular season games, and then he played in 8 playoff games. He put up points.
Oh, no, Radulov.
Always puts up points.
You forget, Drew, Radulov was a top prospect when he came into the NHL. When he came into the league, I mean, the guy has great speed. He's got a great shot. Mm-hmm. I mean, the guy produces. You mentioned his numbers in the Russian Continental League were very impressive.
Yeah.
But is he going to make your team better? Like a team like the Florida Panthers, this is an up-and-coming team. I certainly didn't think they'd be as good as they were this year winning the division. But when you're talking about guys like Aaron Ekblad and a guy like Lawson Crouse is coming into the NHL next year, Rich, yeah. And the Florida Panthers... Horlock, who is leading the Brandon Wheat Kings in points along with Nolan Patrick. The young guys that are coming up, and then you talk about Huberto and Riley Smith and Trocheck, all guys that had great years. This Florida Panthers team is going to be a contender in the Eastern Conference for many years to come, I believe. And then if you throw in Radulov, you know, because guys like Teddy Purcell and Yuri Hudler, those guys might not be coming back next year, Rich. So maybe Radulov, you slot him in on your third line, right? And especially if it's only on a one-year deal. Like, I echo what Rich said. You can't have him under contract for 3 or 4 years. I just don't think you know what to expect at this point. You know he's going to put up some points, but as far as, like, he's a bit of a volatile character in the dressing room, right?
Mm-hmm.
At least he was.
His reputation was, certainly.
Maybe he's changed a little bit as he's gotten older.
Well, I think for teams, they look at, say, what the Blackhawks did with Panarin, in that he's found talent. It costs them very little amount of money, and he can produce at the NHL level. Now, you didn't know that Panarin would produce at this level, but you know that... Radulov has a history of producing at the NHL level, and if it's going to cost you is a little bit of term, or maybe 1 or 2 years of term and a little bit of money, I mean, you're getting an asset for pretty close to nothing, and in this day and age in the NHL, that's so valuable. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Alex Radulov as the summer progresses. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll bring in Josh Cooper. He covers the NHL for Yahoo Sports. He joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
Listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Start of hour number 3 this Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. Drew Mindell, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
He covers the NHL for Yahoo Sports. You can see his work on Yahoo Sports' Puck Daddy blog. He is our very good friend, Josh Cooper. Josh, good morning, and how are you doing, buddy?
I am great. How are you guys?
We're doing well. As also, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been so long since we've had Josh on the show, Drew. What are you doing?
Well, Drew doesn't. Every time we recommend Josh, Drew says, "No, this is not the time."
This is not true, Josh.
This is not the time.
This is not true in the least bit. As I'm sure you do not believe a word coming out of Ezzy or Richard's mouth. Apparently, though, Josh was telling me yesterday that he was complaining to Ted Wyman, who's covering the Western Conference Final, that we haven't had him on for a while, so it was fortuitous timing that we reached out to Josh yesterday to join us. Is that right, Josh?
You know, it's funny. I told Ted that yesterday at practice, and he just started laughing. He was like, I didn't say a word to those guys. I don't know what happened. So it was really, really funny, and I'm glad to be back on the show because, I mean, I missed you guys.
Yeah, we missed really you too.
I was thinking, it was like, you know, I love everything about Winnipeg and Earls, Maine, and hanging out at Earls, Maine with you guys, and I don't know if they still sponsor the show or not. I just gave them three plugs, but it's
better now.
Back on your show.
Yeah, we'll play them that clip so that they can. They'll certainly open up the checkbook for us at that point in time. Now, Josh, before we talk,
basically all I see about you guys, all I think of about Winnipeg is like hanging out with you guys at that place. That's it. Like, I don't think of anything else, really. It's pretty hilarious.
None of the games you saw for the years you covered the Predators, none of those games against the Jets were the least bit memorable. It's all about the post-game shenanigans, right?
Exactly. At Earl's Main.
At Earl's Main, of course, yes. Can't forget about that. Josh's appearance, of course, is brought to you by, you know. Josh, before we get talking about the playoffs, most importantly, are you going to be able to see Springsteen and the River Tour this summer?
Okay, guys. Just hold on to your seats for a second here.
Okay.
I was hanging out at a restaurant with my wife, and we got a text message or a phone call from her cousin one day, and I was exhausted from just hockey season stuff or whatever, and Springsteen was in L.A., and I just didn't want to go. I got a phone call from her cousin, and he goes, "Hey, I got two extra tickets to see Springsteen. Do you just want them?" So not only did we go see Springsteen that night in the pit, at L.A. Sports Coliseum, the last major event at that building. But the actor who plays McLovin was about 5 feet from us the whole show.
So who was more impressive, McLovin or Springsteen?
You know, it was funny. Like, cause the show was great, and you want to talk about nothing but the show afterwards, and all we can talk about afterwards is how McLovin was just completely into it.
That's the important part there. So now let's shift our focus back to hockey. You're covering the Sharks and the Blues series. The Sharks, of course, have a 2-1 lead with Game 4 going later on this evening or late this afternoon in the Bay Area. You know, how impressed have you been with the San Jose Sharks through the first three games and their ability just to completely stymie the St. Louis Blues in their offensive attack?
They've been really good, and I think so much of it goes through Joe Thornton, and I know he's not the guy on the team with, like, the big sort of major stats. Like, he doesn't lead them in goals this playoff. He doesn't lead them in points. He's not Brent Burns, who's just kind of roaming all over the ice and doing his thing, but he's doing every single little thing you need to do to win, and when you're a center and you're playing like that, it's so valuable, and really that line's been unstoppable, and everybody else in that team has been unbelievably committed. And I think that that's been just vital for them. It's just the commitment level from that team up and down their lineup. The fact that Joe Thornton is playing at age 36, some of the best hockey of his career, it's just made them such a dangerous group. And, I mean, look, the series is just 2-1. And Ken Hitchcock, I guess, was after game 3, fielded a question of, you know, how adverse a situation is this, and he just throws it to the reporter and he goes, "It's only 2-1. There's still a lot of hockey left to be played here." And yes, they've been out, they should be down 3-0 to some degree, but it is only 2-1. And really, you're one good game away from a team that has a lot of talent and a guy on that team that scored 40 goals from tying the series at 2-2.
Josh, heading into the series, a lot of the focus was on depth, as it always is, right? St. Louis has the depth on forward and on defense, and a lot of the focus was also on the goaltending. But we talked about it in the first hour. When you look at this series, sure, the Joe Thornton, Joe Pavelski line has been very dominant alongside Thomas Hertl there. But to me, what's been the most surprising maybe in these entire playoffs is how well San Jose's played defensively. You're talking about Mark Edward Vlasic, Brent Burns, but also a guy like Justin Braun, who I think is a very underrated defenseman. They've completely neutralized the St. Louis Blues. They've only scored 2 goals in this entire series. To you, has that been the key to this series so far?
Absolutely. And I think that what they've been doing to a major degree is they've been showing that the best defense is really a good puck possession offense in the offensive zone. And when the other team is coming down on them, they're just keeping them the outside so well. And I mean, they're a team that's not really known for their defense to begin with. So to see this type of performance from them and basically making sure that Martin Jones is seeing every shot, keeping everything to the outside. And look, I mean, when I think of the one memorable goal by the Blues this series, it was Jori Lehterä's game winner in game 1, and that was a goal that Martin Jones probably should have stopped. That wasn't a good scoring chance. So they've done a tremendous job defensively, just shutting down the Blues, and really pretty much all playoffs, the exception of the Predators series. I mean, they just basically have been phenomenal defensively.
Josh, what do you think Ken Hitchcock's biggest adjustment is to get this team back into it?
Well, he did change. He is going to change his goaltender to try to get more offense. So that's something, yes. It was when he announced he was going with Jake Allen today. There was a really good question by a local columnist in St. Louis, and he just basically said, "You know, your offense is struggling, so you're changing your goaltender. Please explain that." And I think it's just, he's trying everything because he knows that his team's been the worst team in the playoffs in comparison to the Sharks. Like, the Sharks have just been better than them through three games. So, I mean, the goaltender is a big adjustment. He's tried putting in Magnus Pajarvi. He put in Yastin. He put in Bortuzzo. I mean, Scotty Upshaw is going to potentially come back today. He's trying everything, but I think one of the biggest issues is that sometimes you have these coaches. You have two different types of coaches in this league. You have coaches who really throw the kitchen sink and make lots of changes and shift around lines. Then you have coaches who are just flat out consistent and say, "Okay, guys, play." And really, both are successful in their own ways. And Pierre DeBoer is the type of coach who just keeps all of his lines stagnant. He makes a couple of small adjustments, but that's about it. And Ken Hitchcock basically throws everyone around, and it's just the players, for whatever situation it is, are just kind of used to it.
Josh Cooper joins us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's covering the Sharks and the Blues series. You can read his work on Yahoo Sports Puck Daddy blog. Josh, which veteran has had more influence on the San Jose Sharks? Joel Ward, who came over from Washington, or Paul Martin, who came over from Pittsburgh?
Both have been so good, guys. I mean, Joel Ward just plays so well in big games, and you can move him up and down your lineup. You can play him at wing, you can play him at center. He's 35 years old, going on 28, basically. Paul Martin's had such a calming effect on Brent Burns. He's such a savvy operator. He's so mobile back there. He's a great defender, not like from a physical perspective, but just from a positional perspective. And I think the mark in some regards of a great defenseman, if you're not an offensive guy like Brent Burns, is you just don't notice him out there. He just like kind of plays his game, and you just kind of are like, okay. And afterwards, you don't really remember him doing anything major offensively or anything major defensively. And really, that's Paul Martin, because he just plays so well that everything he does is good, and he's been excellent for them. So, I mean, look, they're long-term contracts. I do think that because they're long-term deals, they're going to eventually be a little bit tough for San Jose to swallow, because they are long-term deals and the guys are in their 30s or late 30s or mid-30s. But, I mean, for right now, for this year, if they win the Stanley Cup, it won't even really matter.
Josh, when you look at this series, Game 4 later this afternoon, what happens in Game 4 is going to tell us a lot about where this series is going. Obviously, if the San Jose Sharks go up 3-1, there's a good chance that this series is going to be over in 5 games. But regardless of how many games this series goes, is it safe to say that this is going to be a huge disappointment for the St. Louis Blues and Ken Hitchcock particularly if they don't go to the Stanley Cup Finals?
I think so to a degree, but I mean, I don't know. I think the bigger issue here is what's going on with Vladimir Tarasenko. I think that's where the disappointment is. I think Hitch has done everything he could. I think he's used every single lever he can. He's won basically, he beat the defending Stanley Cup champions, and then he beat the number one team in the Western Conference in the regular season to get to this point. I mean, it's always disappointing when you're a team like the Blues and you have Stanley Cup aspirations and you don't hit them. But, I mean, my question here really is, what's up with Tarasenko this series? Because he just doesn't seem to be that into it. And I don't know if there's anything that's going on here. I mean, I know he just had a kid, but I don't know if that's the reason why. But he just seems like he's just not that engaged in the series, and I'm just curious as to why that's going on.
Josh, we were talking, let's just quickly shift away from this series for a second here. We were talking last segment about Alexander Radulov. You covered him in Nashville. There are rumors that he's looking to return to the National Hockey League. If you were making the decision for an NHL club, would you give Radulov a contract? And if so, what would that come in at?
I think it would depend on the club. I mean, from what I saw in Nashville, I would say no. And I'd only say that because he just, not that he wasn't committed, but there was just something there that just didn't really click.
And maybe he's different now, maybe like a few years, a few years more mature. Maybe he kind of gets it a little bit more, but there was just something there that just didn't seem to be, I don't know, it just didn't seem to kind of click with him. And granted, he's a tremendous offensive player. He's made a lot of money in his career. He's a really, really just sound goal scorer. He scored at every level, continues to score in the KHL. But I don't know. It just depends on the team. I mean, if you're a team that's looking to take a chance, add some offense on the cheap, perhaps, because a lot of these KHL deals or KHL players come in at cheaper rates, I think it's worth it. If you're a team that's looking for one more piece, I don't think it is worth it. So, but then again, I saw him at a time where he had just basically moved back from Russia to Nashville for a few months, and it was a tough situation. The way things kind of broke down with him that night with the curfew thing and everything, I mean, I think that really kind of put a stigma around him. I don't know if it was really as big a deal as it was made out to be. I mean, hockey players go out all the time. Granted, it's the playoffs, but there's so many sides to that story, and I don't know which one is true, to be perfectly honest, and I wouldn't hold that against him, but just from what I could see from him, his interactions with teammates, just kind of how that all broke down, it's a tough situation. I just don't know. Like, it could either work out really well or work out really poorly, and part of that is just because I haven't seen him or talked to him in years.
Josh Cooper covers the NHL for Yahoo Sports. You can read his work on the Yahoo Puck Daddy blog. Josh, always appreciate your time. It was good to have you back on.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Really appreciate it. And real quick, we didn't talk Bachelor or Bachelorette. Don't we normally do that, or is that someone else?
I'm not a Bachelor Bachelorette guy, so I don't know about Rich or Ez, but I think Ezzy might curl up with a nice bottle of wine and it catches some of the episodes of The Bachelor.
Josh, I'm more of a Big Brother guy.
Really? I like Big Brother.
Well, you guys maybe start your own reality TV show. That would be good radio.
Or we could talk to Josh about Fuller House, which was obviously filmed in the Bay Area.
Are you guys Silicon Valley fans?
You know, I've heard that it's very funny, but I've never actually seen it.
Of course you've heard it's funny, Drew. That's right up your alley, Drew.
I've never seen it, though. I don't know.
Those shows are right up your alley.
Is it worth watching, Josh?
It would be right up your alley.
It's right before Veep, right?
It's right before Veep. It's hilarious. And it stars T.J. Miller, who, not related to J.T. Miller, who also was in the wonderful hockey movie. By hockey movie, I mean a movie that had a hockey scene in it called Two's Out of My League.
Ah, yes, of course. That's starring, what's his name? The guy who was in Goon. Jay Baruchel. Yes. I was actually watching that movie last weekend.
So there's definitely a real hockey connection there with T.J. Miller. T.J. Miller. I always get confused with J.C. Miller. It's just always just completely just such a brain tease right there. It's so confusing. But, yes, it stars him. It's very funny, and I think you guys would really like it. Well, so please, before you have me on next, and I hope that I earned another visit that won't take another year to get me on. Please watch that, and then we'll talk about it.
Okay. Well, when I post the interview, we're going to discuss. We're going to evaluate your performance, and we'll let you know when we're going to have you on next.
Okay. Sounds good.
Josh Cooper joins us. He covers the NHL for Yahoo Sports. Thanks, Josh.
All right. Take care, guys.
Take care. Let's head to break. When we come back, we discuss the Flames and the Ducks coaching search. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Curve Crew are back. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Talking about the removal of Bob Hartley, he also said, and there's blood on a lot of people's hands. And Brad was very clear about that he felt that Bob had taken this team as far as he could.
The Ducks and the Flames still searching for their head coach after dismissing both Bob Hartley and Bruce Boudreaux earlier in the offseason. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey and sponsor of the ICOT Pool. Anytime a playoff game goes to overtime, you can submit your selection to us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Make your one guess, and if you guess correctly, you can win prizes to Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com.
Got a funny story for you.
Please. Well, we are talking about a comedy club, so it would be fitting.
Right. Well, and I'm not that funny. If you remember when Dave Shore wore the shirt, Ezra Ginsberg is not funny, to our CRECOM stand-up night, but I was...
You had a good couple of jokes that night.
Yeah.
You're kind of funny, but you're more... I don't know if you're stand-up funny, but you're just very clever right off the... You know, you need somebody to sort of set you up, and then you come with a quick one-liner.
Yeah, I usually have a few good lines. I have 10 bad lines, but I usually have a couple of good lines.
Yeah, you know.
So, funny story.
Ask out 10 girls, you know, 10% success, it's pretty good.
We were at a real estate function that was hosted by the company that I work for at Earl's Main, actually,
okay.
On Monday night.
They don't sponsor the show after this episode.
Sorry, it was Tuesday night.
It's really irrelevant to the story.
So the party was Tuesday night, so we had an OT pool.
Okay.
Kind of a makeshift OT pool,
sure,
at Earl's Main during the Penguins Lightning game.
Yeah. Who won the Red Wings game?
That was the game that Sidney Crosby scored the overtime goal, if you remember.
I do remember it was game 3, if I'm not mistaken.
You remember it was last week.
So we do a OT pool with some people from my office. Okay. There's about 5 of us.
Yeah.
And the winner, you know, usually you put in $2, $5, whatever, but nobody had cash on them. So instead the rule was whoever wins the pool has to buy the other employees in the office coffee. So I picked Sidney.
So I just want to stop for a second there.
Please.
Usually in the pool, the person who wins get some prize.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be considered a prize.
No.
Well, you get the everlasting love of your colleagues.
So I'll tell you this. If I was in that pool, based on what you've told me so far, I would have... The last player to have been picked would have been Sidney Crosby.
Sure.
Did you pick Crosby?
I took Crosby. So you're right. It wasn't a conventional pool. Usually you win something, but in this pool...
So you wanted to buy coffee for everybody.
No, well, I took Crosby. I mean, I didn't know Crosby was going to score.
Well, thank you. He's the best player on the ice.
Right, but I mean... I think that was his first playoff OT goal, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
with the exception of 2010.
Well, that's the Olympics.
I know. It's the first NHL, but he
scored
in the overtime. Okay,
but that's not just the story.
Oh, this is the longest, most drawn-out story.
So I win the pool.
Win, in question mark.
So I win the pool, and I have to buy everybody coffees.
Okay.
So I didn't do it the next morning, but on Thursday morning, I'm at work, and you know, I'm like, okay, guys, I guess I should buy everybody coffee now. This is like at lunchtime. Because, you know, sometimes you buy coffee after lunch.
Yep. Yeah.
And I had to walk with... Someone had to come with me because there were 5 coffees to buy.
That's a lot of coffees.
So I needed...
The trays only carry 4.
Yeah. So I couldn't have 2 trays, Drew. Or I couldn't have, you know, one hand with a tray and one hand with 1 coffee or whatever, because there's 4 coffee.
Yeah, that'd be
coffees
weird.
Per tray. So I walk with 4 people from my office, 4 other people. So there's 5 of us.
Uh-huh. Thank you. So we were able to add 4 plus 1.
So we go to Tim Hortons.
This is a hell of a story, by the way.
And...
She got you reading audiobooks.
Earlier in the day, I had left my wallet at someone's house the previous night.
Someone.
And as we're going up to order the coffees, I'm like, oh, guys, you're never going to believe this. And then my buddy Sean O'Neill, who I work with, goes, let me guess, you're going to pull the I left my wallet at the office trick. I didn't even have my wallet on me. So somebody else from the office had to pay for the coffees. But Friday, I then had my wallet and then bought everybody from the office coffees.
What I want to know is, because I know very well that you have never packed your own lunch to take to work. What did you have for lunch on Thursday when you had left your wallet at someone's house?
That is a great question.
That day...
Drew, that's the best question you've ever asked anybody on the show.
That wasn't Thursday. On Wednesday, we actually had a hot dog cart at the office. So... We had kind of like a work function. So I actually
dodged that bullet.
I had 2 Smokies and a hamburger. So I didn't need my wallet. But I certainly needed my wallet to buy those coffees. So.
Yeah, you didn't need a wallet. You needed an angioplasty afterwards, though.
And I should mention, it was Bryce from my office who bought the coffee. So shout out to Bryce. He's a good guy from Fort Francis, actually. Pretty good hockey player.
What day was he born? What does he like to eat for breakfast? I mean, how much more are we talking about Bryce
here? I don't know what his birthday is. I think he's a Capricorn, though.
The Ducks and the Flames coaching search. I really can't transition through that very well. Still no word on either of those two teams. Are you surprised that they're sort of taking a long, drawn-out process to evaluate different candidates? You know, are you surprised they didn't act as quickly as, say, the Wild or the Senators did to find a new head coach?
That's a tough one. I'm surprised that the Wild acted as quickly as they did. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's ownership pressure there. We had Michael Russo on. He kind of alluded to that possibly being a case. Ottawa, I'm not sure. I mean, Ottawa, I thought, identified a couple guys and went after them. They knew what they – Ottawa knew what they wanted a little bit more, I think. I think Calgary wants to get a bit bigger, you know, a better look at what's out there. Sure. I know they want to get more defensive and certain in certain aspects. They want to get better in puck possession, which they talked about. Anaheim's a different scenario. So I think it's – the fact that both of them are looking at the same time, I think, makes sense because they're not looking for the same coach. Adam's looking for the guy who will take them to the cup.
Right. Is that guy out there?
I don't know, but immediately.
Sure.
And Howie's looking for the guy who will slow build with them.
Sure.
So the fact that I don't think they're competing for guys, maybe as Minnesota and Ottawa were, even though they're kind of different teams too.
Sure. I mean, Calgary's looking for a guy to sort of develop their young players and maybe make them, we know they have the offensive talent, but maybe make them more well-rounded as NHL players maybe?
I think Calgary's looking for guys who can get them to buy in to play a better defensive system.
Sure.
And they obviously need to get the goaltender to help them to affect that. So I think it's on living on both aspects of getting the coach and then getting that goaltender. Anaheim, is the coach out there? That's a fair question, Drew.
Anaheim sort of reminds me of a little bit about how Pittsburgh was cycling through head coaches the last number of years.
It's funny you mentioned Pittsburgh because Mike Yeo right now is considered to be one of the front runners to be hired by the Ducks. And then you have other up-and-coming coaches like Travis Green, Luke Richardson, and as far as the Flames are concerned, Rich, I think I'm not surprised, Drew, and for many of the same reasons that Richie just outlined, the Ducks are a team that have aspirations to win the Stanley Cup every year. I mean, this is a team that the moves they made, and they're certainly not afraid to make moves. They were very good in the regular season winning the Pacific Division, and then everything fell apart again in the playoffs, losing in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
And then Flames, you have a team, a young up-and-coming team, that I think wants to get back to the playoffs in 2 or 3 years down the road, then they're going to make their push. Because when you have guys like Sean Monahan and Johnny Gaudreau and Sam Bennett, I mean, I don't think the Flames are that far away. Rich has said this many times on the show. They have to address the goaltending problem in Calgary. The goaltending was not good enough this year.
No.
For me, the team is pretty good if they're healthy. I mean, sure, what are you going to do with a guy like Dennis Wiedemann? Are you going to keep him around? But when you talk about their defense, Dougie Hamilton's young, Mark Giordano, TJ Brody. I mean, that defense is very good. So when you look at the Flames, I would expect them to go with a veteran coach. But then you hear a guy like Dave Lowry's in the mix, who's been coaching Victoria in the WHL. You hear Travis Green might be in the mix. To me, Calgary desperately needs a veteran coach with NHL head coaching experience.
See, I disagree. I think Calgary can have the younger coach growing with the young roster. But I see your point because there's people who definitely have a different view of that. I think Anaheim needs a veteran coach because there's big time personalities in that room. Kessler, Perry, Getzlaff. If a young guy comes in and gets eaten alive, like they only have a short window here to win.
And see, it's this time of year that is the most fascinating as far as coaches go, Drew, because you hear other names. Rick Bowness in Tampa, who's been a longtime assistant coach, used to coach for the Jets.
Mm-hmm.
You look at another guy, Kirk Muller, has been an assistant coach with the Blues. Kirk Muller and Rick Bowness. Assistant coaches sometimes don't get as much of the limelight, right? But they've both done an excellent job. They're both still in the conference finals here. So maybe Calgary goes with one of those two guys. Mm-hmm. But I agree with you, though, Rich. I mean, there's something to be said for having a guy like Dave Lowry who's familiar with the organization, a guy that's had a great track record. You guys remember was a coach at the World Juniors,
mm-hmm.
even though the World Juniors were a bit of a disappointment this year with Finland winning. But you know, there's a lot of good coaches out there, and there are only 30 head coaching jobs in the NHL, right? So if you think of it like that, there's a reason why Brad Treliving and Bob Murray are taking their time, right? They want to make sure they have the right guy. Look at over the years, Drew, especially a team like Edmonton, who's recycled coaches year after year, right? I don't think these teams want to coach someone and then have to make a decision whether they want to keep that guy one or right. 2 years down the road.
Yeah, I'm going to be surprised if Calgary's guy is a recycled coach. I don't mean that in a disparaging sure. way. I would think it would be a coach, probably a first-time coach, or a guy who's hasn't coached in a while. Maybe, you know, maybe like a Jim Playfair, for example, is a short-term and left and is coming back. Not a guy who just coached as a head coach for the last 15 years. Anaheim one is a fascinating one to me because the pressure is immediate, mm-hmm. but the opportunity is also immediate in terms of success. And Bob Murray has went away from the kind of the more critical, aggressive coach in Randy Carlyle, who I think highly of. I know he's been criticized a lot, you know, after the time in Toronto, but I think highly of Randy Carlyle. Then he goes to Bruce Boudreau, who's more your player's coach. And then, so where does he go? Does he fall in the middle now? I mean, both those guys relied on Getzlaff and Perry as being their two guys. They've added more players, obviously, over time. There's going to be changes. But do they go more in the middle? And I think it's going to be very interesting to see what the Anaheim Ducks do here. I think Calgary as well. But again, I think Calgary is a long-term thing. I think the Anaheim guy may only be there for 2-3 years.
We will find out and keep you abreast of what's going to happen there. Coming up next, Wade Allison, the MVP of the United States Hockey League, is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Twenty-five minutes before the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mindell, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Wade Allison. Wade is the pride of Roland, Manitoba, and last night he and his Tri-City Storm became USHL champions, winning the Clark Cup Championship, sweeping the Dubuque Fighting Saints. Wade, congratulations on the USHL Championship, and welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure to have you. In addition to winning the championship, you were named playoff MVP. Just how important, you know, was the championship to you and your teammates? And how, you know, on a personal note, how excited are you to be the USHL playoff most valuable player?
I mean, it was cool to be the most valuable player, I guess, but I don't really worry about that too much. I was just kind of happy to see us win. You know, I'm not so much concerned with the individual stats, I guess, than I am with the team winning. So I guess winning that was it's something else. I mean, it definitely took my breath away. It's something I'll remember for the rest of my life.
Wade, in addition to being fantastic in the playoffs, your offensive totals really jumped up in your second year in the United States Hockey League for the Tri-City Storm. You went from 13 points in your rookie year to 47 regular season points. What did you see improve in your game that allowed you to take that jump offensively?
I think it had to do with a lot of confidence. I think my first year didn't have a lot of confidence going in. And, I mean, I had an injury right away, which didn't help. And I just found it tough to really get going and get confidence, I guess. And then this year kind of came in, had a tough start, but my confidence came in. So that was definitely key.
I'm reading here, Wade, that you're the first player to win the USHL-NHL Top Prospects Game MVP and the Clark Cup MVP in the same year. Do you know that?
I did not.
So pretty impressive accomplishments, of course. You know, looking at the coach of your squad and winning the championship this year, we're going to feel a little old in this room, but Bill McCault, former New York Islander, Vancouver Canuck, Ottawa Senator, drafted by the Canucks, of course. He's your head coach. How much of an impact has he had on your career so far?
Oh, I mean, he's been huge. I mean, he's stuck with me all year. He's really believed in me, and I think he's definitely benefited me personally and definitely the team. I mean, he's an unbelievable coach.
Wade Allison joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Wade and his Tri-City Storm teammates won the USHL's Clark Cup last night. And Wade, of course, is draft eligible coming up at the NHL draft. It's going to take place later in about 5 weeks from now. So, Wade, now that the Clark Cup is over, you guys are champions, is your focus strictly turned to the NHL draft and seeing where your next development, you know, hoping to be drafted, you know, at the NHL draft?
I mean, obviously I'm hoping to get drafted, but I mean, it's kind of out of my control, you know. I mean, I'm just gonna hope for the best. I mean, I'm not too worried about it. I mean, obviously I'm thinking about it, but like, it's not my main focus. I guess I'm just worried about resting up and then starting training again.
Wade, you were one of 114 players that were invited to the 2016 NHL Scouting Combine, which is going to take place in Buffalo, I believe. What did it mean to you to be invited to that NHL Scouting Combine, and does that mean that you're going to have to start doing a few more sit-ups and push-ups?
It's definitely a huge honor. I mean, it's something I'm very proud of, and it's definitely exciting.
And Wade, you're committed to Western Michigan for next year, is that right?
Yes.
And what attracted you most, and Andy Murray, of coach from Manitoba as well, I'm sure you're aware of that, just for our listeners, and you're a Manitoba boy, was that the main attraction for you, playing for Andy Murray?
Yeah, I'd have to say so. I mean, he's got probably one of the most impressive resumes in hockey, so I figured he'd definitely help me out. So, I don't know, I just thought it was a good fit. I really like campus, and I don't know, Andy Murray is probably most of the reason I'm going there.
What's the biggest thing you're looking at the draft? And, of course, your game always gets picked apart leading into the draft. And what would be the one thing you think you need to get better at?
I'd say in the D-zone, getting all the way and blocking the shot, like getting in the lane. I mean, sometimes I get like halfway in the lane and then like the shot goes right by me and I look. I was like, oh, I was just a little off my angle. But I'd have to say that for the most part.
Wade Allison joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Wade just won a USHL championship with his team in the Tri-City Storm. He's hoping to be drafted in the NHL draft coming up. He is a Western Michigan commit for next season. Wade, you've seen your draft ranking skyrocket through NHL Central Scouting earlier the year from 192nd all the way to 62nd. How much do you pay attention to the NHL Central Scouting rankings, and do you at all use them as motivation throughout the course of the year?
I mean, I don't really pay attention to them. I mean, I don't know. I've seen them and stuff. I've heard about them. But, I mean, I don't really worry about them too much. I mean, for the most part, I don't really worry about them a ton.
No, Wade, we mentioned you're from small town Roland, Manitoba. Tell us about, you know, your upbringing playing hockey as a kid, and who are some of the other Manitoba-born players that you look up to?
I mean, I live on a farm, so I mean, Dad built a rink in the backyard when I was young, so that was awesome. I mean, he put in so many hours out there in the minus 35 degrees, you know, so, I mean, I can't thank him enough. I mean, he's single-handedly the reason I am where I am today. I mean, he's always got my back. Everything he does, everything I do, I mean, he supports me, and, I mean, it's been incredible, but, what did you say the second part of the question was?
Any sort of hockey influences? Obviously, your dad was tremendous, and you know, doing as so many dads do when moms do, and make commitments and make sacrifices to help your career. But any players in particular that you sort of either Manitoba-born players or other players that you maybe modeled your game after, or that you used as mentors throughout your rise in the USHL?
I mean, there hasn't been a ton of Manitoba boys who come here, but. I have a good friend. He's from Saskatchewan, I guess, Jesse Gabriel. Kind of look up to him. I mean, he's a big, strong boy. I like the way he plays. I mean, we're good friends. So, I mean, I'd have to say, I kind of like him, you know. I mean, I'm great friends with his dad. I mean, his dad's awesome. His dad's definitely helped me a lot, too. So I have to thank him for that. But that's probably who I'd say I look up to the most.
Wade Allison was the MVP of the Clark Cup. His teammates and the Tri-City Storm were winners of the Clark Cup championship. He's expected to be drafted in the NHL draft coming up later on next month in Buffalo. Wade, really appreciate your time this morning. Congratulations on a terrific career, and we'll keep a close eye on you as you progress throughout the next stages of your hockey career.
Thank you so much for having me.
Our pleasure to have you on, Wade. Let's head to break. When we come back, one final segment this Saturday morning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
One final segment this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. It's brought to you by the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life. Illegal Curve is thrilled to be participating in that event. It is 2 weeks plus 1 day away from today. If you want to help join Team Illegal Curve, or you want to contribute some funds to Team Illegal Curve, visit rhcf.mb.ca. Had a number of people come up and ask me, you know, where do the funds go for the Riverview Healthcare Center Cycle on Life? All the funds raised go towards renovating and reinventing the Alzheimer and dementia units at the Riverview Health Center. There's 4 units, and each has 15 residents, so there are 60 Alzheimer, dementia, and special behavior beds at the Riverview Health Center. And, you know, best practices today, you know, they were built in 1994. And so, of course, in the course of, you know, 20 years, best practices have changed. So the Riverview Health Center is gearing all their fundraising towards making changes to their Alzheimer and dementia units. They're reducing the size of the units. They're increasing the opportunity to access the outdoors and the natural light. They're introducing technology to improve the quality of life of the patients who are in the Alzheimer and dementia wards at the Riverview Health Center. So we are really, really proud to be supporting this event, to be cycling in the event. If you want to raise some funds and or join Team Illegal Curve, I'll send out a tweet with all the information, and of course you can just get in touch with us and we'll give you all the info to get in touch. I saw Ezzy, you were getting your bike ready for the cycle. Ezzy or Rich, you have 2 weeks plus 1 day to learn how to ride a bike.
Yep.
So, you know, we have a lot of work ahead of ourselves, you know, to raise money and complete the bike ride and everything else. I gotta tell you, Richie, I'm a little nervous for you.
Well, I thought there was like going to be cordoned off area, and apparently you're telling me I'm riding in traffic.
No, no, there's not true. There's no traffic. It's a beautiful, quiet Sunday morning, and you're going to be surrounded by other cyclists. So there's no worries about traffic or anything along those lines. But, you know, you're a pretty good athlete. You're a good hockey player in your day. You're a little bit old and washed up now.
I'm
surprised to hear that, you know, cycling wasn't ever.
Yeah,
good
I never did. I was more into rollerblading.
Okay.
But I'll give it a shot. I'm going to borrow Ezzy's bike this weekend.
You have to wear a helmet.
Yes, I'm aware of that.
Okay,
Drew.
Just want to make sure. That,
don't worry about that. Wearing a helmet.
You're a pretty cool guy. I don't want to wear a
helmet. No, I'll be wearing a helmet, Drew. Okay. There's a pretty good chance I might fall.
Are you going to wear elbow pads as well?
No, probably not elbow pads, but I should think about it.
Okay. So, you know, I have no doubts whatsoever that we'll be able to get you up on the bike and, yeah, you know, we'll do as much of the cycle as we can, Ezzy and I, but we're going to look out for you first and foremost.
You know, I want to say, you know, big congrats to Wade Allison for
you were Snapchatting while biking this week. I was like, how do you
really
even do that?
Snapchatting while biking?
I'm pretty impressed.
That can't be safe.
Probably not that safe.
Well, I wasn't going that fast. I mean, I was going down a side street, so it's not like I was going 30 kilometers an hour or whatever, but we are definitely looking forward.
But you wouldn't drive your car and Snapchat at the same time.
Maybe. I hope not.
I was going, like, I was pretty much stopped when I was Snapchatting.
Okay. Right.
It was a quiet street.
Okay.
I was wearing my helmet.
I'm concerned about you. Safety first.
I want to say thanks to Wade Allison on behalf of all of us for coming on. You know, he scored 16 points in 11 playoff games for the Tri-City Storm of the United States Hockey League. Richie asked him about Western Michigan, who he'll be playing for next year. But mm-hmm. This guy is now ranked 62nd by NHL Central Scouting. He's from Manitoba. So he's going to be a very good player in college, and an NHL team is going to get a really good player. So it was great that he came on after you know, winning the Clark Cup just yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely. So congrats to Wade, you know, a tremendous athlete, of course. At the other end of the spectrum when it comes to tremendous athletes, I draw your attention to the following quote in Doug Brown's Winnipeg Free Press article.
Oh, yes.
You know, this is, has to do with the...
Rory, get the sound of the bus ready because Drew is right about to throw me under the bus.
You participated in the kids' sport...
5.6 or 6.3 seconds.
Yeah, in the actually 6.5 seconds, Richie. In the kids' sport media challenge last week,
I thought that was pretty good for a guy who has a bad back.
It wasn't very good. In fact, it was dead last. You know, this had to do with the shuttle drill that we're running in. You know, I'm proud to call him a friend, but Sean Asor won that drill. Sean Asor, of course, here at TSN 1290.
Sean's got wheels.
He's filled in for us here on Illegal Curve. He's, you know, on occasion. Sean won the event. And then at the other end of the spectrum, this quote from the Free Press, quote, at the other end of the spectrum, it took media contestant Ezra Ginsberg over 6.5 seconds to complete this measure, which will put him at a considerable disadvantage when he has moved to the highly competitive kids sport grouping of 5 to 8-year-olds next season. So really, not only are we throwing you under the bus by bringing it up on air.
That's right.
But Doug Brown in the article threw you under the bus as well. And, you know, I think you really need to improve your shuttle drill speed if you want to compete against those 5-year-olds next year.
Blue Bomber Hall of Famer Doug Brown.
Canadian Football Hall of Famer.
That's right. Yeah. And it was a great event. What Doug didn't mention in his article was that I was top 5 in the punting. I had a punt of over, I think it was about 35 yards. That wasn't mentioned. I mean, let's be honest here. I didn't think I was going to do very well in the 40-yard dash. I'm not exactly Donovan Bailey or Andre DeGrasse over here. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't thinking that I was going to do very well. But I think overall, you know, that event was so much fun. And I'm looking forward to it. I think I could probably beat a few 5- or 6-year-old, you know, next year. I could definitely punt farther than they can.
Well, I can tell our audience.
As long as you don't punt the 5- or 6-year-olds.
Yeah, just don't kick kids. That's important. Don't be kicking kids. But, you know, I can say to all of our audience, anybody that wants to actually see Ezzy's performance, it has been put into a YouTube video.
Wow.
So, you know, I'll tweet out a link, and you can watch Ezzy's entire performance at the Kids Sport Challenge.
Do you think anybody actually wants to spend their Saturday of the long weekend watching me, a washed-up 33-year-old athlete, doing these type of drills?
Probably not.
Drew
seems like he's going to be doing it.
Well, I mean, I sent
you... that together in a YouTube clip? Did you do that?
I have no skill whatsoever to put this together in a YouTube clip. Who has, of all the people you know that were at the event...
Oh, it's for sure Carter Chen.
No, it wasn't Carter. He tweeted out some links to your performance. But who do you know that would have the time and effort to put it to video?
His name is Michael Remus.
There you go. Michael Remus is the only one who...
Remus.
Yeah, would have the time, the want to put it to music.
Yeah, that's not a surprise.
And compile
it. Hold on. There's music?
Oh, there's music.
What's the music?
Is it like the Curb Your Enthusiasm, like clown music?
No.
Thanks, Rich.
Sorry. Well, you're running. Is that the 40-yard dash? Okay,
6.5 seconds. Come on, Rory. I mean... it wasn't 10 seconds. Is 6.5 seconds really slow?
Is it the 40-yard dash we're talking about?
Yeah, the 40-yard dash.
Yeah.
There's a number of different drills, but one of them
I'm not a fast guy. I mean, but for me, that's like, isn't that what I should be? Like, you guys are giving me a hard time here.
6.5 seconds sounds pretty long.
Well, it's not, speed is not my forte.
What is?
Although I've seen you run 6.5 seconds there and back to the chip machine here.
I'm good at eating.
Good at eating, yes. Aren't you going to compete in the pierogi contest?
I don't think I can do it next year, Drew. After competing in that pierogi competition, I might. I mean, we'll see if Huss needs me. But after I ate like 25 pierogis in 7 minutes,
yeah,
like I had to really just lay down on the floor and kind of just be, because like...
just be, you have to be serene while lying on the floor?
That's pretty gross, and he lost by like 50 pierogies.
Rich loved the fact that this guy, Dude Love, that was in this pierogi eating competition, finished second place, crushed about 35 pierogies, and then Rich saw him walking around the concourse eating a piece of pie.
With dessert!
What? He's a trained professional when it comes to pierogi eating. But anyways...
If Chocolate Thunder is back next year, Abdul Karoma, who ate 51 pierogies in 7 minutes, if he's back next year, nobody has a shot. I mean, nobody can top that.
That is a very impressive feat. There's no doubt about that. Let's talk about a couple odds and ends from around the NHL. The Oilers re-signed Zach Cassian. He gets 1 year, $1.5 million. Are you surprised that he was able to garner that much money on a 1-year contract given the... his history and his personal issues that he's had?
Well, first of all, I think it's nice. I mean, Zach Cassian's a guy that, if you remember when Vancouver acquired him, he was a guy that they thought that might kind of provide secondary scoring. At this point in his career, he's 25 years old. He's more suited to kind of a third or fourth line role in the NHL. So it's good for him that he got a contract. I always like a guy getting a second chance. Right, so we'll see what he can do. Hopefully he can turn this into another NHL contract. But he's a guy that can certainly play, Drew. He's a big guy. He can drop the gloves, but he can also score. He scored at the junior level. So, you know, hopefully he's able to contribute for the Oilers.
Yeah, and I'm surprised. I guess he adds a different element to a team that has a lot of the same player. Not the, you know, skill is, there's worse qualities to have than the skill that they have. But, yeah, I'm not that surprised, Drew.
Respectively, the Detroit Red Wings announced that Kyle Quincy and Brad Richards won't be re-signed, and the Nashville Predators announced that Paul Gostad and Eric Nystrom won't be re-signed. You surprised at all by those?
Nystrom's under contract. I believe you're talking about a possible buyout. Gostad's a pending UFA.
Right. So are you surprised there that those decisions will be made?
Not particularly. Those are the type of players who get squeezed. That's just the way it is. Veteran players who aren't your top six guys anymore. And have trouble fitting into your top four role. Teams have defensemen on entry-level deals that they can slide in there, get comparable play, maybe a little bit worse, but the trade-off is not such that with the amount of compensation required that they're not willing to take, take that hit.
You know, Paul Gostad, I thought, was good in the playoffs. He's 34 years old. I wouldn't be surprised if someone signs Paul Gostad to play on their fourth line.
I agree with you.
Similar to like a Matt Cullen in Pittsburgh who's playing at 39 years old. So Gostad, you know, from nearby Fargo, North Dakota. I really wouldn't be surprised. He's still a good player. And
great in the faceoff, though.
I've always been a big fan of Eric Nystrom as well. Has he slowed down a little bit? Yeah, he's still a very fast player.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if he also gets picked up by another team.
And then the question is, is this the end for Brad Richards, a tremendous NHL career?
It may be.
It might be?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. That's it for this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to our guests, Wade Allison of the Tri-City Storm, Michael Russo of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, Josh Cooper of Yahoo Sports, Dean Brown, Ottawa Senators play-by-play broadcaster on TSN 1200, and Guy Flaming from TSN 1260 in Edmonton. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes. Search for The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe and get us sent to your iPod each and every week. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life, Keener Jerseys, and Bell Acres and Clear Lake Golf Course. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is illegalcurve.com. For producer Rory, for Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for World Hockey Championship action, Canada and the U.S., coming up next here on TSN 1290.